Hey everyone, thanks for joining us for a bonus edition of Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. No Jamarl Thomas right now. It's just me, Ted Rall, and producer Robbie West. And I think this kind of started out as it was going to be a Ted Rall official Rumble premium edition, and things morphed because there's been big changes afoot in the Deprogram universe over the last week or so. And, you know, changes that all the thought of change made Robbie and I think about climate change. Well, actually, climate change came up, as it often does, on TMI with me and Milichan. So we thought that we would use today's bonus round to sort of hash out, hopefully in a civilized way. Let's not forget we're live on YouTube. So, Robbie, we're live on YouTube.
It's true, YouTube.
So we're live on Rumble on YouTube and Rumble here in the 12 noon hour on Friday, April 10th. Thanks for joining us. And basically, Robbie and I have strong agreements and disagreements on certain issues. We agree about a lot of stuff, but there's some issues where there's very little common ground. Climate change is one of them. I agree with the scientific consensus, and Robbie does not. And we will get into that. I think it's an important discussion to have because, look, let's face it, this is a deeply divided country on this issue. In my view, it's one of the most important existential issues of our time, probably the most important. I mean, you know, if you don't have a planet, it doesn't really matter if you're dealing with racism or economic inequality or you can't unaffordability of healthcare. None of those things matter if you don't have a human race. And I don't want to put words into your mouth, Robbie, but I think it's also important that, let's just say for the sake of argument, that if climate change were a hoax, that we not be wasting our time arguing, killing jobs and you know, changing our lives in order to accommodate something that might not be true. That's not what I think, but the point is, no matter how you look at it, you know, we can't really agree to disagree on climate change. We've got to hash out a solution and get some kind of, you know, national consensus so that we can figure out what we're going to do or not do about it, instead of doing what we've been doing, which is basically yelling at each other and ignoring each other on this issue. Robbie?
Sure. No, listen, I agree. And here's the thing. I do believe that the climate changes. I mean, that's obviously true. I mean, throughout recorded history, we know that climate has changed. We know that during the antiquity period, especially during the late antiquity period, the world was warmer than what it is now. Was warmer. That's one of the reasons why agriculture exploded. It's one of the reasons why Rome became the major power that it was. We also know that the Earth cooled. That's one of the things that caused the Vikings to leave Scandinavia and go find other places. And famously so, they went and they took what they wanted. And that's where the whole term Viking even came from. I think where the disagreement comes from is it a cylindrical thing? Is it something just baked in to just the natural order of the planet, just the way that it works? How much influence on weather do humans have, if at all? I think that's the disconnect. It's not that climate change isn't real. It's how much effect do humans have, and the hubris that people have thinking that we have the power to dramatically impact the nature, the weather of an entire planet using models when we, our scientific community, got things like COVID so spectacularly wrong. You're asking me to put a lot of faith into a very flawed and very corrupt system.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Global warming / climate change, whatever you call it, is not really a very complicated concept, right? I mean, basically the idea is that if you burn a lot of carbon and carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases go up into the upper atmosphere, that basically you end up with a sort of terrarium effect where the sun's rays go through there, but then the cooling that would normally happen doesn't happen as efficiently. more as less heat, more heat goes into the atmosphere than goes out. So you have a net average heating effect. And I guess, you know, one of the things you mentioned during TMI was you thought the planet is just too big for human beings to impact to that extent. But we know that human beings, I mean, you can see the effect, for example, of the Canadian wildfires a few years ago.
Sure.
So I know those were kind of caused by human beings, but aside from that, let's just treat that like a natural phenomenon. So the clouds that resulted, the smoke clouds that resulted from those fires were so big that they spread across the entire continent. They darkened the skies, turned the skies orange across most of the nation, most of North America, including Canada, for weeks on end. They were so big that they created their own weather systems where there were thunderstorms that attached to themselves to these clouds. Now, the thing is, we create clouds and pollution, air pollution clouds that are as big as what come out of wildfires, right? The total aggregate of greenhouse gases that are pumped in to the atmosphere by the human race through automobiles, airplanes, factory production, and so on is monumental. And I guess the bottom line is that when you have a human race that's 7 billion strong, highly industrialized, and has been industrialized for 250 plus years, the planet's not really as big as it used to be. I mean, it's like, you know, when the Earth's population was, you know, half a billion people, and, you know, they were only a small fraction of them lived in industrialized societies, and sure, they were burning wood, it didn't really have a significant effect. That stuff was a drop in the bucket.
I'm going to push back on there for just a little bit. We know that at one time, Central North America, the Great Plains, is heavily forested.
That's right.
We know that the Indians chopped those trees down.
Yeah, they did.
And so,
which is actually super interesting, right?
So you can't really just pin all of this on the last 250 years of the Industrial Revolution.
And to
your point, you're talking about, you're burning carbon. I'm no scientist. I'm probably the dumbest person that you ever want to have to talk about this topic. But I'm pretty sure that plants breathe carbon, don't they? Don't they breathe carbon and then they exhale oxygen? So isn't carbon at that point nothing more than plant food?
Well, if we had more plants, then they would be absorbed. But before the plants can't absorb all the carbon that's pumped into the atmosphere, and they certainly can't absorb the carbon dioxide that's in the upper atmosphere because plants aren't up there, right? So, I mean, yeah, plants.
Well, you have rain up there. I mean, that's where rain and snow, and that's where the whole hydraulic system even begins. The water vapor goes up there to consolidate, turns into water, comes down. I mean,
but if we're talking about the heat of the air in the atmosphere. That's really the issue here.
Well, sure, but and kind of like what we talked about on TMI, right? Mount Etna in Sicily is probably the single greatest polluter in history. That volcano, throughout its history, has created more greenhouse gas and carbon, methane, all of these bad gases you're talking about. Mm. That one volcano, through the thousands of years that it's been active, has produced more greenhouse gas than all industrialized nations combined. So I don't really understand the whole doom scrolling here. I don't understand your point.
I'm going to find out if that's true. I'm going to ask, how does Mount Etna greenhouse gases production compare to human production? Because I know that Mount Etna has an effect, and it is like one of the world's most active volcanoes. But here we go. Mount Etna produces about 3 million metric tons a year of CO2. Some studies have cited an average between 3 and 13 million. Global human carbon dioxide emissions are between 37 and 42 billion tons a year. So Mount Etna's annual CO2 output is about 0.01% of annual human production emissions. So
sure, well, I'm talking about over the last 4,000 years.
9,999 more volcanoes.
Well, I'm talking about over the 4,000 years of recorded history from where the Greeks first started writing about fire mountains. What I'm kind of pegging this at.
Okay, well, even if you do that, look, here's the thing: climate change and human caused climate change, absolutely, and other things. Absolutely predate the Industrial Revolution. It's just that with the Industrial Revolution, the production rate skyrocketed, pun intended. Definitely there was an effect. You mentioned the Plains Indians. They burned carbon to create roads and other stuff and build towns. That's all true. And they did add to, they did heat up the planet. It's just that we're doing it now incredibly efficiently at an incredible scale. That's the difference.
Okay. So I guess what I don't understand is how do you separate weather and cycles from a flawed scientific model? Because you're resting everything that you have, the whole argument that climate change is a man-made phenomenon, which I totally reject.
Well, it's accelerating at a really. I mean, one way to look at this is, it's occurring at such an incredible speed, at an incredible rate, that it's like, so that makes you look at, okay, this is like an extinction level event, like the sixth mass extinction. So that alludes to the fact that previous mass extinctions have occurred due to things like the meteor that struck the Yucatan Peninsula millions of years ago and killed the dinosaurs and everything else on the planet, pretty much, right? And everything had to kind of do a hard reset and start from scratch. I'm having trouble. I'm sorry. Like, I lost track. What was your question again?
Well, I guess that what I don't understand is, how can you put so much faith into a scientific model when scientific models, they fail?
Scientific models can be wrong, of course.
They're wrong more often than not.
That's not true.
Well, let me just kind of point this out real quick. I'm sure that you've heard of the butterfly effect. Can a butterfly flying around in Beijing eventually influence weather, in New York City because of the way that it stirs up no dust, that kind of thing, the particles. Mm-hmm. It's kind of chaos theory, right? Can the human mind really comprehend a system as complex as what Earth has? That's the breakdown. Because if the model is wrong, then everything that you extrapolate from that model has to be wrong too, because the entire basis of the theory is flawed.
Well, look, it's certainly true that there are thousands of climatologists working on this issue. If we knew everything there was to know about Earth's climate, we wouldn't need them. They'd be out of work, right? What they have is a very strong working hypothesis that a big part of what's going on right now is caused by human climate change. Basically, the theory is, it's kind of a common sense theory. You can't really pump this many greenhouse gases into the atmosphere over a short period of time geologically and not have some sort of effect. And the question then is, what is that effect likely to be? And then they start observing things that are happening really, really fast. Like, you wouldn't normally see giant ice sheets melting away or 10,000-year-old glaciers melting away in a matter of 20 years.
But hold on, how do we know that?
Because a giant volcano or a meteor or something.
But how do we know that? Because we know, like, for example, in the 200, 300 BC era, up to around, I don't know, probably around 300 AD, that the world was was a lot warmer than what it is now. So mm-hmm. how do you know those ice sheets are breaking apart? How do you know that they weren't disintegrating?
Well, we do know because they do because of ice core samples.
Yeah, so, but what you just now said, unless I'm misunderstanding, is that up until recently, we did not know that the ice sheet ever disintegrated. Well, we know that it did. We know that Greenland at one time was...
We know that it never happened that quickly before. Like, you know, you can get ice core samples going back tens of thousands of years in Antarctica and in the Arctic. We know from those that, this is unprecedented. We're seeing, even when you look at the changes that occurred look, there were dramatic changes during the ice age, right? Sure. Like there were, there's the famous examples of the mammoths who were found to have had buttercups in their stomachs when they died of frost, right? So they were eating in a grassy meadow, and then they were overcome by advancing cold weather systems and killed. So things can happen dramatically for sure. I guess the thing is that what you're talking about now is it's so dramatic. Or another, let me put this another way. Do you think it's really possible, Robbie, to pump 30, let's just say for the sake of argument, 40 billion metric tons a year of crap into the atmosphere, and that's not going to have any meteorological effect?
It depends on what the crap is, right? I mean, if you're pumping up sulfuric acid, yeah, sure. I mean, you're poisoning everything. If you're pumping up carbon, and carbon is the building blocks of everything. I mean, plants use it to grow. The earth is greener now than as far as I know that's ever been before. If we have fewer trees, that's true.
Because we're cutting them down.
Yeah, I know, and that's a major problem. And for people who are watching the chat, I want y'all to understand I'm a conservationist. I love the outdoors. I like to go hunting. I live in Montana. Mm-hmm. So we are commanded by God to be a good steward of what we have. And one of the biggest things that we do
here, what we're talking about here is explaining what's going on.
Right. So, I guess what we're talking about though, and it's not even a debate. I'm generally curious about it. Mm-hmm. Is the scale. Like, for example, we know that sunspots.
Can I just interject and then yeah. I'll let you kick it. I mean, you mentioned like, well, carbon dioxide is, essential part of the Earth's ecosystem. Absolutely, that's true. But, everything exists in certain proportions, right? Sure. And when those proportions get out of whack, then you get problems. It's the same way that if you have a certain amount of magnesium in your bloodstream that you need to have to live, but then you have excess, you could die, right?
Yeah. Vitamin D is the same way.
And so and Mother Earth is the same way, right? So if you air is a balance of hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and other smaller amounts of gases. And so if you have too much carbon dioxide in the air becomes poisonous, right? In the same way you could live with carbon dioxide, but let's say, you go and sit in the car with the engine running, with the garage door closed, you will be dead soon.
100%.
So I just want to say it's a balance issue. We are changing the balance of what the gases are in the atmosphere.
Yeah, and Robo makes a good point over there on YouTube. You can have it both ways. To be a conservationist, you have to be an environmentalist. I completely agree. I am an environmentalist. That's one of the reasons why I think that this war in Iran is so stupid. I mean, our government that will regulate how much water pressure your toilet can flush is bombing oil fields as we speak. So of the two on a scale,
horrible.
Which one is more dangerous? How much water my toilet flushes through, or the fact that we are causing an ecological disaster, or when we destroyed the Nord Stream 2 pipeline? We released more CO2 by blowing up that pipeline in that one act of industrial sabotage than in recorded history. That is insane.
I'm looking up exactly the numbers there. So clearly, look, that was Joe Biden's disaster. So according to this, it released about 14 to 15 million tons of CO2 equivalent. So, yeah. However, that was a catastrophe. But that's less than 0.1% of global anthropogenic human-caused methane emissions for the entire year of 2022.
Sure.
So, this is not to say that blowing up Nord Stream was okay. I'm just saying that, like, you know, putting it
massive disaster.
I think you're having a hard time wrapping your head around the scale of the pollution and that is generated on this earth. Also, you know, you haven't traveled overseas. When you go to countries, and cities that pollute in other places, it's inconceivable for an American, right? Like, you live in one of the cleanest, most pristine states in the country with a very sparse population. Yep. But even if you think about Los Angeles in the 1970s and 1980s, when it had smog, that's a joke compared to like Mexico City or Beijing on a bad day.
No, I believe it. And I mean, and that's one of the reasons why I really want to have this conversation, because it's not even a debate. I'm sitting at your feet because I want to learn. So I'm generally concerned. I'm interested and want to learn about this, because the way that I'm looking at this, and you're right, I haven't traveled very much. I'm very much a creature just stuck here in my cage here in Northwest Montana. And that's one of my greatest weaknesses, is that I have not traveled as much as you have.
Well, and you will.
One of the things that I don't understand, though, again, is how do you separate what we're doing? How much of it is that we can definitely impact our local environments? 100%, I'm right there with you. But how does that translate onto a global scale? And more importantly, like, for example, you're talking about Los Angeles. You probably can't do this there. It's a desert. I mean, the city shouldn't even exist in the first place.
That's true.
It should be abandoned. But like, say, Beijing, which has a more temperate climate, why can't we just plant trees? Wouldn't the trees at that point absorb that smog? Wouldn't they work as air filters? Wouldn't that be a self-correcting problem that's built into the natural ecosystem? And if that's true, why don't we do it?
Well, trees, absolutely. There's a lot of stuff we could do. Trees need to absolutely be, are a mitigating tool. They call the Amazon, which is the big, obviously a huge site of deforestation. They call the Amazon the lungs of the earth, that by some accounts, 90% of all water in the world's oceans basically filters through the Amazon, and it's being filtered a lot less efficiently. Climate change, global warming is also assisted by things that have nothing to do with greenhouse gas emissions, but are still nevertheless a human caused problem. For example, we should be when we pave roads, we should pave them using white as opposed to black, because white reflects heat back to, and black absorbs it, right? When we have rooftops in cities, we shouldn't be using black tar. We should be using white. It's more expensive. That's why we don't do it. But there's a lot of things that we can and should be doing. Absolutely. Cities like Los Angeles should have plants, not just trees, but plants and shrubs and bushes all over the place. We should be, there's been lots of experiments where like certain buildings try to become like sort of a biodome, where they try to be heated and cooled using a combination of plants and geothermal. There's a lot of stuff we could do and should be doing. And I think part of the reason we're not doing it, Robbie, is because we don't have a scientific consensus in this country that climate change is even a problem that needs to be addressed. This wasn't an issue until Ronald Reagan came along in the 1980s. Up until Ronald Reagan turned it into, he politicized this issue and turned it into, it was widely understood by Republicans, Democrats, left, right, every center, everybody agreed this was clearly happening. There wasn't any question about it. And the only question was what we should do about it. Ronald Reagan, being in the pockets of big business and corporate America, decided to say, well, the best way to argue that we shouldn't do anything about it is to argue that there's nothing to do anything about.
No, I get that. And you're talking about this from a American perspective. But
right.
You and John both talked about how much of a shithole that Pakistan and India are, especially India.
Yeah.
So my question is, why do the people want to live that way? Why do they allow the society to function that way? Where is the will to clean up to clean up where they live? I mean, crapping in your front yard probably is not the best solution if you want to have a healthy society. So why do they allow it?
Well, they don't have a healthy society. I mean, look, the Chinese have made incredible strides. You know, I'm sure you remember the headlines just even from 10, 15 years ago of Chinese, you know, everyone in Chinese cities was walking around wearing masks. The pollution was completely off the charts. When the Chinese hosted the Olympics, they were like, oh, this is a fucking international embarrassment when people come to visit us from overseas and they're going to see the way that we live. We've got to clean things up. And the Chinese government, because it is an authoritarian, highly centralized state, was able to dedicate incredible resources and to new rules and say, we're going to start cleaning things up. We're going to address our air pollution issue. And they are making massive improvements in a very short time. But that's because of the kind of country they have. I mean, they have culturally, it's easier to gain national consensus there to say, like, we all have this problem. Like in China, you wouldn't have people who live in the countryside saying, well, we don't have a lot of pollution. Fuck those Beijingers. You know, they would, everyone kind of like gets on board because it's the culture. Now, South Asia, right, the former British Raj of, basically, which today is Bangladesh, Pakistan, and India, are incredibly dysfunctional societies. I personally attribute a lot of that to the legacy of British colonialism, which introduced a certain passivity and helplessness. What these people need is a good fucking revolution to overthrow their governments and make things right. And I don't mean just about climate change.
Wouldn't that revolution just create more pollution? Because that means you have more war. That means you have more stuff burning. That means that you have social collapse. That means you have starvation. That means you have privation.
A revolution is a relatively short-lived item. It's kind of like I always say it's like political chemotherapy. Makes things worse before it makes things better. It's kind of like how that has to work. But I mean, look, a revolution doesn't have to be a major source of greenhouse emissions. I mean, it can be literally just like the violent overthrow of a regime and the installation of a popular government that prioritizes the people's needs instead of the crap they have in India.
Why can't they just stop throwing their garbage on the street? I mean, that's something that is an option, right?
It's an option, except, okay, here's the thing, Robbie.
Yeah, explain it to me.
You live in Mumbai. You wake up every day. Oh, I'm tired of seeing my litter out on the street every day from yesterday. Okay, where should I take it instead? Is there garbage pickup? No. Does the city provide garbage pickup? No. Is there a private trash hauler that you could hire if you have the money? No. If I write to the mayor and say, hey, you should have municipal trash pickup, do you get an answer? No. And that's why. Because basically, there's no other alternative.
Isn't India the house,
you throw it out on the street.
Isn't India a democracy? And if it is, can't those people then vote in, maybe have trash pickup?
They could. And I think that, but when people are really used to having things be a certain stupid way, it just becomes part of the scenery. I mean, you and I here in the United States have tons of shit like that we put up with just because, you know, we don't even think much about it. And people from other countries, they come here and they're like, wait, you could go bankrupt if you get sick, if you get cancer, you might not be able to see a doctor. And we're like, yeah, that's just how it is. You know, do a GoFundMe, hope for the best. They're just living with, like, it's one of these things, like, one day they will fix it and they will look back and they'll wonder why the fuck they ever put up with the way they lived before. Yeah, but
I guess that's kind of just feeds into my skepticism about this, right? It kind of going back to complex systems, because you have this massive country. Mm. By every definition in the world, it is a colossal shithole. I mean, I think that's a fair thing to say. I don't think it's racist. I think that's just a statement of fact.
You're talking about India right now.
Yeah, I'm talking about India. And so that's a complex system that can't be addressed. Meanwhile, we're having a weather model that's put together. And if we can't even fix small basic things, like how do you pick up trash in one city? How then could you possibly address a a problem that you say is global in scale when you have massive countries, massive economies, and they can't even agree to stop throwing sewage on the street. That's the problem.
I don't know the answer to that question. I wish I did know.
And that's my skepticism, right? Because I'm always hearing about the greenies, and that's probably a bad thing to say, because I said I like the idea of having clean water and clean air. I like being able to not have garbage on the street.
Wasn't real. It's like we still want to protect our environment.
For sure. Well, at least I do, and I don't understand why the people in India don't want to protect theirs. Like the Ganges River. For everything I've read, I've never been there, but as far as I can tell, it's not a good place to be. If that's your holy river, maybe you should clean it up. Just saying.
And you know what's really appalling? I've been to the Himalayas, to near the source of the Ganges, and it's such a beautiful fucking river, so fucking beautiful. And what they do to crap it up is amazing. But look, you and I both know about how bodies of water can go from being disgusting to improved dramatically. Look at what's happened. The Los Angeles River, they've gone to great strides to improving it to the point where it's actually like a place where people go canoeing and kayaking. And it used to be absolutely disgusting. It's a lot more work to do. The Hudson River, people, you can swim in it now near New York City. Lake Erie is a great example. Back in the late 1970s, early 1980s, famously, the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland debouched into Lake Erie. It caught fire. It had so much garbage, so much crap in it. Lake Erie was declared biologically dead by the EPA back then. They couldn't even find microbial life in Lake Erie at all. Nothing. It was just a giant dead sludge inland sea. And then the recession in the early 1980s, there were two recessions back to back, put a lot of factories in northern Ohio out of business, and in northwest Pennsylvania, that were dumping toxins into Lake Erie. Within 10 years, fishermen were catching huge fish in Lake Erie. And it's a whole different world now. So nature can recover when you stop fucking with it.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, my question though for you is that, for example, I mean, we know the different things that affect weather and affect climate. And I think that a lot of people, myself included, have conflated the two, the difference between climate and weather. Mm. We know that sunspots affect the Earth's climate. The uh-huh. more sunspots that there are, the hotter the planet gets. Why that is, I have no idea, but that seems to be the trend. So I think
that's pretty simple. A sunspot is a solar storm, and it pumps. Basically, it means that the sun is a little hotter, so we get more rays. That's it.
Gotcha. Yeah, and a big shout out here to DM Mel Tolls at $20. Thanks for keeping the show on the air. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And Harder Anger. I joined prepared to be angry at Robbie's opinion. I left it feeling sorry for his evident lack of further education. I do, however, deeply respect for his willingness to learn. Hey, listen, I am one. I like to think that I have an IQ that's at least above room temperature, but I've told Ted, I am not a particularly educated person. And that's one of the reasons why I like to sit at the feet of people who are and to learn. I try to be open-minded. And so that's why I'm here. I'm not here to debate Ted on this issue. Mm-hmm. I'm here to learn from him and then push back.
I wrote up the description of the show and I kind of described it as a debate, but yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not bringing back Robbie Aide. Not right now. John Levin is just too much. It's just too much of a hit to the show, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to take money out of JT and Jamal's pockets. I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah. Obviously, look, there's no doubt that it's a hit to the show. We think we're going to recover, and we really appreciate you guys who are watching. So,
Ted, I mean, I'm going to shock a lot of people, probably more myself more than anyone. No, you're talking about how do we fix this problem? Mm. I think that you and it's actually your idea. You have to take the Chinese model. If climate change truly is impacted by humans, then the Chinese showed us how to fix this.
They did.
By becoming an authoritarian state,
mm-hmm.
and then saying, this is what you're allowed to do, this is what you can't. And if you are a country, because again, if climate change is real, well, let me rephrase this. If man-made climate change is real,
right,
and not a natural cycle, then that means you're going to need a large and powerful orderly society to go in and occupy, and at the force of a bayonet, force disorganized and just screwed up societies to literally clean up their garbage. I don't see any other way to make this happen. Like, if China occupied India tomorrow, would India look like a shithole like it does a year from now? Probably not.
Maybe in a year it would, but not in 10.
Yeah, but I mean, do you agree with my hypothesis?
Yeah, like, I do.
Societies are just too dysfunctional to function.
I'm not married to the left enough to think that it's more important for us all to be free while we're dying and gasping for breath in the year 2065, right? I mean, look, I agree with you. I think we need we're at a point now where we could all fucking die. And, and that's coming sooner rather than later. I worry that my son won't not get to live out his natural life. If and when he has kids, they certainly won't be able to live out their normal natural life. And that sucks. And especially because it's completely avoidable. It probably can't be fixed now because there's so much energy that's already been pumped into the atmosphere that even if we went to pre-industrialization and, hunter-gatherer societies again, it probably is too late. But I'd like to think that, the Earth might be able to heal itself, and or at least in part. But I agree with you. We need some kind of, overarching control. I mean, it's interesting. In the first time the Taliban ruled Afghanistan between 1996 and 2001, Afghanistan had a lot of major ecological problems. And one of them was that people were cutting down trees for firewood, even in cities and villages and towns. And the authorities kept saying, if you need to cut wood for firewood, go out of town. Right. Like, go out of town and go and bring it back. We need the trees in town. Afghanistan, it gets brutally fucking hot in the summer. You need those trees. Well, anyway, people didn't listen. Afghans are pretty hard to control. So the Taliban came in and they said, if we catch you cutting down one branch of one tree, we will execute you. And they meant it and they did it. And guess what? Problem solved.
Stopped.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess, and again, listen, you know, I'm a small government, maximum liberty kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is,
huge individual liberty person.
If the problem you are describing truly is accelerated by the human condition,
mm-hmm.
then that means the third world, where the vast majority of pollution is, has zero right whatsoever to ever be self-governing ever again. They can wreck the entire country. If you can wreck the entire globe because of your pollution, then you don't have the right at that point to be free. So then where do you draw that line?
No, I think that's right. I think this is not a place where small L squishy liberalism works, right?
But it can't. If you're talking, liberty works in a system of scale. The problem is, if you're talking about a global system where everything is interconnected, and what happens in Zimbabwe or what used to be Rhodesia, used to be the breadbasket of Africa, now it's just a failed state. The Congo, what's going on right now, just basically in the entire Congo Basin, the subcontinent of India, if you are wrecking the global the ecological system to the point where you are putting the entire planet at peril, then you no longer have the right to be self-governing.
I agree. And talk about or at least bear in mind also that we have feedback loops that are now in full effect, right? For example, previous climate change has melted permafrost that is now releasing, you know, peatlands and those methane emissions that were locked underneath the permafrost into the atmosphere, thus causing more climate change, thus causing more melting of permafrost, right, and so on. So it's a vicious circle. I'm going to go in order here. China is the biggest producer. They're getting better. They produce 29 to 30% of the global total. The U.S. is number two. We're about 11 to 12% of the global total. Then India, about 8. The EU combined is about 6. Russia's 5. Indonesia, don't think much about, 2.3. Brazil is about the same. Japan's about the same. Then you go into Iran, Canada, Saudi Arabia, for obvious reasons, and South Korea. I think if you just did the... So 60% of global greenhouse gas emissions are just from China, U.S., India, EU, Russia, and Indonesia. You could almost ignore the other ones. And then there's some that like just basically have crazy amounts for the size, like Qatar, Kuwait, Bahrain, and the UAE. Also obvious reasons. These are refineries, refinery action. But if you just did those top six, you'd be well on your way. I mean, if you could have those six countries agree to a national, to an international consortium agreement where they all agreed not to do this anymore, you know, we'd be well on our way.
What's the bigger problem, cow farts or cars?
Oh, I think clearly cars. I'm going to compare.
Then why does our government try to regulate ranches and regulate methane excretions from cows while not doing anything at all about cars and the industrial pollution such as it still exists? It seems like our government is punching down as opposed to actually addressing issues.
So this is fucking interesting, actually. It turns out that they're about the same. Now, the difference is one car emits a lot more greenhouse gases than one cow. But there are a lot more cows than there are cars. So basically, the net effect of the cow methane is huge. By the way, you can, you know, change their food. There's lots of stuff you can do so they don't outpollute individuals, but cows be really farty, apparently.
Well, here in Montana, they're free range, right? Yeah. I mean, you're not going to change that. I mean, they're out there, they're out there in the grass and the alfalfa hay. You're not going to change that diet. It's crazy.
I guess cow methane is, I mean, it's hilarious, but it is kind of like it's a major consideration because, agribusiness and livestock production is a massive industry.
Yeah, well, people need to have this stuff called food, right? Yeah. I mean,
I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying I guess this is why the government's focused on that, is the answer to your question.
But it's the wrong thing because the U.S. military is the largest polluter in the country.
Well, I guess another way to look at it is it's like, look, what's more important, cars or cows? Cows are more important.
If we had high speed rail, you wouldn't need as many cars. Like, why can't we have a rail? I would love to go visit you. I cannot afford to go fly on go visit you on a plane right now, especially not now. Mm-hmm. But if I could go on a high speed train mm-hmm. that went from New York City to Seattle, mm-hmm. and I could do that, and it has a smaller footprint.
And it would, and it should, and you know, look, it could conceivably take 6 hours.
Yeah, for sure. So mm-hmm. I guess what my question is, first, how trustworthy are the models? Just kind of just bring this thing back to the conversation. I don't think that they are at all. I don't think that they're.
I think they really are. I think
based on what? Because the same scientific community that gave you the bullshit about COVID is the same one that's giving you the same bullshit about weather.
Well, remember, we're on YouTube here, so...
I understand. And listen, the vaccine is safe and effective. Everyone should get like 20 shots.
Everybody.
100%.
I got a lot of them. So
COVID... I guess that's my hang-up, right?
The thing about COVID, right? So the mRNA vaccine was developed about 20 years before COVID. not much was ever done with it until COVID. And I think that basically they didn't, they were kind of like, the scientific community overstated their certainty about COVID way too quickly, right? Like now we have a pretty good sense of what's going on with it, but they really didn't. And they overstated it because they were trying to control the population. Now, but with climate change, it has been studied now for the better part of a century. It's been studied by people in all sorts of countries with all sorts of different political and economic systems, different levels of education. It's been studied this way, that way. There's just so many metrics, and everything kind of comes back the same way. So, you know, it's kind of like if you, like, let's say you test my blood, right? You're going to get I remember the first time I got my cholesterol tested, my doctor called me and he said, "Oh my God, Ted, you're going to fucking die. You're like, your cholesterol, I've never seen such cholesterol levels." And later it turned out that the fact that I had stopped by the diner and had a lumberjack breakfast of bacon, sausage, French toast, and eggs may have had an impact. Nobody told me. You're supposed to fast before you get this thing tested. So how the fuck am I supposed to know?
Right.
But the point is that, like, if you have to sort of, you know, test the right way, you have to test over and over again. But if you tested my blood, my cholesterol level every hour that I'm awake for the next 10 years, you're going to get a pretty good sense of what my cholesterol really is. If you just look at that one time or two times, maybe it's not really good enough. If you test an old guy like me, my PSA levels, again, you know, like I went in to see my doctor recently, and he's like, "Oh, have you had sex in the last 24 hours?" And I'm like, "Are you hitting on me?" And he's like, no. It's like your PSA levels will be really elevated if you've ejaculated before we take a test. Nobody ever told me that before. I didn't know that. So your PSA is like, if you're a guy, it's like kind of reliable, not really. That's not like that for climate change. Like, we really have, you know, been measuring this shit every way till Sunday. And to the extent that you can know anything, we know this.
One of the big skepticisms that I have about it is that you just now talked about how COVID was a lot about control.
Yeah.
You can say the exact same thing about the
authorities made a decision that they were like, "We know best, and we don't have time to convince the American people and walk them through to have a debate. We've got to just get them to all get vaxxed. And we'll just say anything." Like, you know, like when Fauci said, "Oh, you don't need masks." You do need masks. Like that kind of thing. It was just like, it was a very poor decision because obviously it damaged their credibility.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I don't trust anything that the government says. I submit to you that one of the things about the Green New Deal is more about control than it is about doing anything meaningful. I mean, from the conversation that we just had, if we were really serious about climate change, we would declare war on India, team up with China, partition the country, and clean it up. Instead, what we're doing is that we're talking about how much water your toilet can flush. Meanwhile, we're blowing up oil refineries. So for me, that's where you kind of lose me. If this is really the existential threat, and you have all these models are showing as a threat, and even rich people who are in government probably want to live somewhere, then they're not taking this very seriously. It seems to be more about just trying to control the populations in the United States and in Europe writ large.
Generate some economic activity while they're at it, Robbie. I mean, you know, the whole thing is, like, you know, the grifters get involved in any kind of political move, right? I mean, let's just say we lived in a society where it wasn't profit-based. We don't have to call it communist or whatever. We'll just say that, like, you know, there's no money in it for anyone. And the political class just looks at people's problems and says, "Okay, what are the biggest problems? Let's work on those first, and go down the list." The way a family would do it, right? What's our biggest issue? As you would as an individual, what's my biggest problem?
Well, odds are your biggest problem is not the family farm in the Netherlands. odds are your bigger problem is something else. So right. Then why are you bringing the fist of the state down on the farmer?
Yeah,
and like, that's where you lose me. That's why I think this whole thing is a joke and a bad one at that.
Well, it's not. Here's the thing. It's not a joke, but it's being treated like a fucking joke by these assholes. I mean, that's true, and that's what. And you're picking up on that. Like, and it's kind of like, look, if people want to say, and I've said this jokingly, right? And I kind of mean it. Like, it's like first of all, recycling, mainly a scam, right? Like, they mainly just throw everything into the landfill. It's just to make you feel like you're doing something. You know, it's just like, it's kind of like when I go shop for a car, you know how much thought I'm going to give to like greenhouse emissions? Like, very little. You know, you might as well fucking party in your Ford F-150 because, like, what you do as an individual makes no difference. It has to happen at the governmental level. And you're right, Robbie. It has to be done in a sort of brutalist, authoritarian, top-down kind of way, like the Taliban did with those trees.
Let me ask you this, because literally over there in the YouTube chat says, I don't think Robbie realizes how bad war is for the environment. You can't clean up India by attacking it. But just earlier here in this conversation, we talked about how China, being the authoritarian state that it is, cleaned up the country in like 10 years. So if global, so again, I'm just kind of just going back there. And for me, this is very alien because I'm a very small government kind of guy. If you're going to clean up India,
it's an authoritarian state, right?
Yeah. Well, if India can't clean itself up, then it is incumbent on the world to clean it up for them. And that means they forfeit the right of being an independent nation. That is an authoritarian way to fix a global problem.
Now, this is ironic because it involves oil and gas pipelines. But when the Caspian Sea in Central Asia became open for oil exploration, there were basically about five or six pipeline projects that bid for it. And the fastest and easiest and cheapest to build would have been from the Caspian Sea out to the Persian Gulf via Iran. But because it would have had to cross Iranian territory and there were sanctions against it, the Western oil companies were like, okay, we can't do that. Then they were like, the second shortest route was across the Caucasus to the Mediterranean. They're like, well, we can't do that because there's like Chechen rebels and stuff who live up there and they might hold it. They might hold it hostage. Then there was the Trans-Afghanistan pipeline project, which I wrote a book about, which would have debouched in Multan, Pakistan. But that would have had to go across Pakistan, Afghanistan, which also could have been held hostage by, you know, tribesmen and militias. So long story short, the one that got built first was by far the longest and most expensive. And I will give you one guess which country built it and what country it went to.
If I had to guess, I'd say China.
Bam. Now, they built their pipeline, ended up being about 18 times longer than the one that they should have just built through Iran. So the Chinese, when they set their minds to something, they can do it.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right. And again, y'all have to understand, those of you who are watching, if y'all have watched me or listened to me any length of time, I'm a very, very small government kind of guy with a very strong individual liberty bend. So what I'm talking about here to me is about as foreign as I can get from an ideological perspective about where I am. The whole point of this is that if global warming is truly being accelerated by humans, mm-hmm. specifically with the, and if it has a global impact, and if you have just a cluster of countries that are the ones who are directly impacting the ability of the earth to continue to preserve human life, then it is incumbent on the stronger, more organized nations to then remove those countries' independence to clean them up and to fix them, because they're not able to do it themselves. And so, Ted, I mean, where am I wrong on this? If global warming, if this is truly a human-made thing, if it is a human-made problem, and we are going to destroy ourselves because we have all these shithole countries that cannot fix their problems themselves, how then do you square this? Do you go full authoritarian and you force them to fix it? Or do you just let them just drown the entire world in CO2 and garbage?
If you're serious, You forced them.
I'm being very serious because
if we're serious, if as a human race, if we're serious, we force them to fix it.
Yeah. So then what would that framework look like? That's Tarbag 203. He's asking me, Robbie, what do I think that the framework of the authoritarian framework would be? You would restore the British Raj and you go into the point of a bayonet and you clean up India and you go full Taliban style. If you start throwing raw sewage on the street, you're done. If I see you dumping garbage into the rivers, you're done. I'm turning you into fertilizer. There's no other way to do this. If it is a global problem, and if some nations are not taking it seriously, and if it impacts every aspect of the globe, then you have to force them at that point to take this thing seriously. And Ted, I think that's more of an authoritarian communist way of looking at this than it is from my perspective.
Yeah, it's more authoritarian communist than authoritarian capitalist, because the capitalists will always still. I mean, look, whenever there's a financial inducement, although quite frankly, alternate energies are profitable and lucrative. What's happening here is that legacy industries, oil and gas, dirty industries are
plastic should be outlawed.
They're politically influential because they currently have money coming in, whereas the new emerging green industries are, you know, that's money, that's revenue that's in the future. So they have less money to buy politicians with.
James wants to know, what would it take for the both of us to change our mind to the other side? With me, I don't really know, because I don't even know what the problem is. I mean, if my position personally is that climate change is cylindrical, it happens in cycles. If humans have an effect, it's small and it's local. If Ted is right, and if I'm wrong, and if humans have a very heavy-handed impact on the environment, and we only have the one planet, and if you have a quarter of the global population that's responsible for 80% of the world's pollution, then you got to bring them in through whatever force is necessary. Ted, what would it take for you to change your mind?
Well, I mean, I guess I would need to hear that, like, after all this discussion, all this measuring, all these scientific studies that have been released, it turns out that actually the scientific community, the meteorologists, the climatologists, they were all wrong. They fucked up, and this is why they fucked up. There was something that they weren't considering, something that they considered that they shouldn't have considered. New scientific evidence has come forward and shown that actually there's nothing to worry about, and that even though we're polluting the planet, it's not causing this greenhouse effect. I mean, that would change my mind. It would not change my mind about the necessity to stop polluting our planet, but I guess it would eliminate the urgency and maybe the agreeing with you, Robbie, that an authoritarian approach is what's necessary here.
Do you see any other way to do this? Again, if you're right, and if the scientific models are right, and if this truly is an existential crisis, then can a liberal framework, and by liberal I mean small L, not big, mm-hmm. can that address the issues? Like, you know, can a country like Pakistan?
Clearly not. Right. Because I mean, this look, I remember as a little kid, I'm 62. I remember watching Jacques Cousteau's Underwater Kingdom of Jacques Cousteau, or whatever the fuck it was called. Underwater World, I think it was called, in the 70s. And he was saying, like, I've been exploring the oceans for all my entire life. He was already a pretty old guy. And I'm seeing mass die-offs. And we have until maybe the 1980s to get our ship to right our ship. Otherwise, we're fucked. We have not done dick during that entire time. Greta Thunberg is right. We haven't done shit. It's all been nothing. These Kyoto Accord, garbage, nothing, worthless. So clearly, small liberalism, neoliberalism is completely unwilling and incapable to deal with this. By the way, Robbie, there's some breaking news that's probably worth talking about before we call it a segment. Iran was scheduled to meet with the United States in Islamabad tomorrow. However, looks like they're not going to show up. The Iranians say that unless the ceasefire is honored by the Israelis who have been pummeling Lebanon, and that all of their assets are unfrozen, they are not going to show up.
Yeah, why? Well, why would they? Serious question.
Well, I agree with them.
No, oh, I do too, 100%. I mean, the worst thing that you could ever do is legitimize the country that's attacking you, and then because that just, well, it doesn't solve the problem. The problem is that Israel keeps on just genociding its neighbors because it's what Israel does. And I mean, Iran, it keeps on having a scientist assassinated. It keeps getting bombed. The Ayatollah got murdered along with his daughter and son-in-law. I mean, if someone keeps punching you in the face, you really can't make peace with that person as long as they're hitting you.
No, that's true. And they have to, but you know, it's funny too. Like, you know, there was someone, well, near and dear to me, who, you know, basically screwed me over for years. And I was often asked, like, why didn't you forgive this person? I said, you know what? This person never asked me for forgiveness. You know, so like, if you don't ask me for forgiveness, what am I supposed to do? Rape, forgive you? Like, force my forgiveness upon you? You don't even think you did anything wrong. So, and I think at this point, the Iranians, the first step would be for the United States and Israel to beg forgiveness.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. And there's people in the chat who asked me, Robbie, like, why is it that you think that India should have to clean up its act before the U.S. cleans up its? It's because if this is truly a global system, and if this is truly a global problem, and if what happens in South Asia directly impacts the globe, like, for example, if the Great Barrier Reef is dying, and I think it probably is, then it is incumbent on every nation to address these issues.
Yeah.
And so if you have a country, and if your method of getting rid of your garbage is by dumping it in the ocean or dumping it in the river that takes it to the ocean, to the point where you have these massive islands of plastic and garbage that's choking the marine life, I think at that point it's safe to say if you don't stop, we will stop it for you, because it is a global problem.
Well, I guess, I mean, I would agree though that, like, look, the United States is guiltier than India, right? We generate more greenhouse gases than they do, and we have a smaller population. So we're bad. I think we're one of those countries that kind of needs to be forcibly taken over and told to straighten out.
It very well could be. But I guess I just kind of goes back to what we're talking about here at the top of the discussion. Is if this is a problem, I'm not convinced that it is, but if it is, if Ted is right, and if that becomes the prevalent opinion that humankind writ large, humans corporately, are the ones who are responsible for this, then it has to be incumbent on humans to come together and fix it. And if you have a country that's it's unable or unwilling to fix this problem, then that country doesn't have the right to be independent anymore. And that's where you liberals need to kind of figure this stuff out, and also small government right wingers like me, because if that's the case, then this whole concept of individual liberty and sovereignty is out the window.
Agreed. Because what's the point of it? What use is there if we're all going to fucking die?
Exactly.
So yeah, couldn't agree more. All right. Well, I think that was a great place to end it. Robbie, I really enjoyed this conversation. Look, as always, and love talking to you. It's Friday, April 10th. Thanks so much for watching this special edition of Deprogram with Ted Ryle and Jermall Thomas, and of course, producer Robbie West. We'll be back Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. And I guess unless there's some kind of crazy breaking news over the weekend, which there very, very well could be, in which case, we will create a special show for you guys.
I seriously hope that Trump doesn't just go full Caligula and start slinging nukes.
I'm worried. I've never been nearly this worried in my entire life.
It's wild. The man needs to be impeached. He needs to be impeached, and he needs to be sent to Mars.
I don't think he can be impeached, but I think J.D. Vance could remove him under the 25th Amendment. And I think he ought to. And the way that he can do it, so it doesn't look self-serving, is to pledge not to run for election in 2028.
Vance doesn't have any balls.
I mean, well, let's be, but Usha, he can borrow them from Usha.
Maybe. You think she's a tranny?
No, she's cute. What are you talking about?
No, unless I'm agreeing. I'm playing with you. That was a joke. That was a joke.
Good night. Bye.